Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Kaya.
Easier to join us than fight us,
yeah.
What you're saying.
No.
Your actions speak louder than your words right now, Mackie, so yeah, there you go.
Can you hear the gesture I'm making?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure the audience can hear the stuff now.
I was about to say, it has been more than 30 seconds.
And what?
Hello, and welcome to episode 159. I'm Kaya, and with me is Makalua.
You know how sometimes people say you wouldn't like me when I'm angry? You wouldn't like me before I've had my coffee.
And Dan Q?
Yo, what's up in the hood?
The Mean Team?
The best kind of ship is my dictatorship.
And the Jin.
Na 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 na. Bye, Greg!
Wow.
Ouch. Wow.
That was cold.
We should move the topics around with that kind of thing.
Wow. I'm going to jump on that bandwagon there. Hit the road, Greg, and don't you... Oh, no, wait.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that was mean.
That was a little mean. Whatever. All I said was, bye, Greg. I didn't say it was
a good thing or a bad thing.
I just said bye. Like, you guys think that something's all bad and stuff.
Well, no, you see, I'm saying, actually, what I should have said was goodbye 2K Greg, because he has a different handle that he's going to be on the forums, so that person can stay. But 2K Greg is going.
Uh-huh.
So you know what? Why don't we just go crazy on a live show and actually move that topic around and actually talk about that first, seeing as how Majin brought it up, which he's now thankful for.
No, it's not interesting enough.
Oh, too late. Yeah, everything.
No!
I know it's unusual to lead off the show with this, but why not? Let's shake things up here.
Goodbye from 2K Greg, and reads, hey, Civ fans, today is my last day at 2K Games. I've been a community manager here over 2 years, but the time has come for me to move on to other ventures. I have very much enjoyed being your liaison to the devs, that's short for developers, and getting to be the one to tease and reveal lots of details about Civilization V over this time. I can honestly say that Civilization is my favorite game franchise of all time, and it's one of the primary reasons I ended up getting into the games industry. You guys are in very good hands with 2K David, Tom, who handles a lot of the behind-scenes stuff, even if you don't see him here, and Mar, who just started and introduced himself very, very soon. Also, while this is a goodbye from 2K Greg, it's not actually a goodbye for me. I'm still a Citral, and so I'll be using my personal handle, OverloadUT. What are we overloading? From here on out, thanks for being an awesome community, guys.
So yeah, this was posted on the 12th of October, more or less, and it was just back on the 24th of May that we said goodbye to 2K Elizabeth, who told us that we were in great hands with 2K Greg and 2K David. The new community manager did introduce himself in a subsequent thread. Now, 2K Greg mentioned Mar. This person's username is Dr. Kane. Like you guys, I'm missing 2K Greg already, but hopefully my addition can soften the blow a little bit. Feel free to send me a private message with any questions or comments regarding our games or about anything in general. I'm a big fan of our new titles, Borderlands 2 and XCOM Enemy Unknown, and can't wait to get to know you guys a lot better. So there was no actual mention of Civ in his post, but that's all right.
So we should all PM him asking for relationship advice, because we could PM him about anything in general. And I think if he got like 100 or even 1,000 PMs like asking questions, that would be quite interesting, I think.
I was going to say, the way he phrased that, dude, you just lift yourself up so much.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, I also could use some work. Do you have any advice for me?
Or open mic topic. Cue random music.
Random music. Okay.
Okay.
It was the first thought that came to mind.
Yeah, so Lucky Strike posted on one of the random foreign threads. Hey Dan, love your show. Good for him. just a thought.
Including all of us, Lucky Strike 77.
Yeah. with the rest of us. Just a thought. Remember your old shows where you also spoke about Galciv 2 sometimes? I missed some comments and reflections about Starduck's upcoming game, Elemental Fallen Enchantress. It's to be released now at the 23rd of October, and it's Civ-like game in the same way you could say Galciv 2 is. It would be cool if you talked about it in the show. It's turning out to be a great new turn-based 4X grand strategy with some RPG elements and a fantasy world. Galciv is sci-fi Civ, Fallen Enchantress is fantasy Civ, and some RPG. Take care, Dan. Wish you good health and long life.
I think you should answer this one, Dan. He really wants your answer.
Yeah, apparently. Why did I introduce this?
To help my ego. No.
So we only have 30 minutes of Dan talking straight.
Okay, time to go make a new coffee.
Yep.
Mackie may remember us talking about Galactic Civilizations 2 because that's how long ago it was. Mackie was a regular co-host with me in the first season, yes, all the way back in the first season, where we did talk about Galactic Civilizations 2, but it was all news-based items. We never really talked about strategy in the game, other than the review that was on it on a Polton Civilization site, which no one on the panel at the time, guest or otherwise, actually wrote. And that was a big thing, that none of the regular panelists played Galactic Civilizations 2 to any great extent. I think I played it for about a few hours in total. It wasn't so much that I didn't like the game, but that my gaming time was limited, and I focused in on Civ. Rather than being a Civ-like game, it was Civ.
In space.
A Civ. Similar, well, there's other reasons why we didn't cover Master of Orion 3, but again, this is the... Has no one played that? We treated, for example, Alpha Centauri to a focus special rather than... So it was covered, but we tried to cover the entire game in an extended special. And if there's an interest from our audience, we may try to do that with Elemental Fallen Enchantress. Now, for those people who are wondering about Fallen Enchantress, it's essentially a remake of Elemental War of Magic that a couple of years ago received less than favorable reviews. Actually, by comparison, Civ 5 was loved by everybody. And in fact, if you purchased Elemental War of Magic, it's going to be free. And wants it, of course, it's kind of like a do-over.
So it's technically an apology for the other game.
Yeah. And this time, it comes with John.
Yes. And also part of that team is Derek. Of course, John referring to John Schaefer, who went by Trip in the Civ community back in the Civilization 3 days, and then, of course, became the lead designer on Civilization 5 when he was a developer for Axis Games. And Derek referring to Kale, known very well for his mod Far From Heaven on Beyond the Sword, and is also now at Stardock. It's one of those things where we're trying to always evaluate what it is that we are and are not covering. And given that we record every other week, given that try to keep the recording to somewhere between an hour and an hour and a half, and given the communities that we're in and the people that we know, I mean, heck, even now, the regular panelists will agree that how much we cover Civilization 4 versus Civilization 5 is a difficult enough balance. And if we started to cover Fallen Enchantress as well, and or in the past, let's add Alpha Centauri, and or Master of Orion 3, and or whatever it happens to be, then we're going to start diluting ourselves a little bit and become more of a strategy podcast as opposed to a Civ podcast.
Okay. Short answer, comes with Kale means it can't be horrible. Comes with John means it's not going to be built well. And it's a repeat of a crap game. So there you go. Enjoy.
Every once in a while, a repeat of a crap game turns out to be good, though.
Well, it was a fail game because they didn't code it well. It's not that the game concept itself was bad. It was just that it was built really badly.
Well, besides it being down the beaten path, there really wasn't a demand from the audience. No one asked, would we cover Elemental War of Magic? And it might have something to do with the reception that it received. I don't know.
Probably.
Because everybody read the reviews and said, I'm not buying that.
Yeah. Stardock is way better on the whole community management and dealing with stuff than 2K is by far.
Email from Scott Messix Maglio. If I mispronounce that, I apologize. I'm not good with names. In a recent poll on thread entitled Anxiety or Rationalism, I made the following post, originally posted by Messix. Since a lot of people tend to say the tradition is the best opener and piety is often cited as being underwhelming and not producing enough, here's an idea to fix both. Move legalism, maybe with a new name, to piety. The tradition gets a +3 and the opener, liberty, gets a +4 city. Why not move the 4 free culture build piety? This would improve the piety tree, nerf the tradition tree, and make the timing of legalism more of a choice rather than delaying tradition to abuse the bonus building.
I think he wants to switch the piety opener to tradition as well.
All right. I'm having a hard time putting all these movements in my head and envisioning final picture once you do it.
Moving legalism to the piety opener basically gives you a powerful opener for piety in classical. So not really a good plan. Putting the piety opener, the cheaper building time for basically it doubles your hammer output towards shrines and temples. That's the opener.
Oh.
So moving that to tradition, sure, whatever, but it's not really a tradition thing. It's a piety thing. And if you move that to something else, then piety is not really a religion side anymore, at least not the opener. And I don't know who gets into temples and other such things and has those all built before they open piety. But if you're saving the piety opener and you're building shrines and temples constantly, I'm not sure what you're doing.
Well, I guess let's look at it this way. And you're much more of an expert on Civ 5 balance between social policies than me. Do you actually feel like piety is underpowered? And if it is, then isn't this post really just fishing for a way to make it stronger against your other options? This sounds like a convoluted approach to solving the problem. It seems like you'd create more.
Yeah, well, some people find piety underwhelming, and there are certain things like theocracy in piety that's underwhelming. I don't think the piety opener is underwhelming. Being able to double your hammers to get your temples faster in the early game means that, say, you go to philosophy, so you can actually build those temples, you're not going to have a huge amount of hammers early. So if you want to get a religion faster, opening piety and building temples, especially for all of the civs that have temple-based unique buildings, it's definitely going to be better. The question on tradition, is traditions the best opener? Tradition's only chosen to be the best opener now, because in vanilla it was Liberty. It's only chosen to be the best opener now because Liberty got its settler moved back and because the free Great Persian in Liberty now costs you rather than being completely free. So nothing in tradition actually changed between vanilla and Gods and Kings, except making legalism work properly. So I don't think tradition is the end-all, be-all opener. There's plenty of times that Liberty is just fine. Legalism, some power players do abuse it for 4 free Watts or 4 free Opera Houses or whatever, but you might as well just open tradition and get to classical and then open piety. And then when you're ready, you go back to legalism and go.
Yeah, we had talked shortly after Gods and Kings was released how piety seems to have this identity crisis. Is it about culture or is it about faith and that dilution? And then back into the thread where Messix originally posted this was piety or rationalism. In terms of making a choice, rationalism is by far ahead in terms of popularity. And I think that's representative of the greater Civ community as well. And it's certainly my view. So I agree with his intent here, which is to try to make piety more desirable more of the time. So rather than kind of there's this kind of exception quote that I would rather go piety as opposed to rationalism or even, you know, piety period, to make you think a little bit more about that. And what Slapshot 2119 in the thread said, that he thinks that moving aristocracy from tradition to piety is a much more logical move for several reasons. Aristocracy plus 15% bonus building versus wonders and plus 1 happiness for every 10 citizens in the city. His second point, though, says that the piety tree is supposed to be culturally focused, and it may be implied that this is even at the expense of research, not choosing the rationalism tree. So wonders do well wonders for culture. And I don't feel that piety should be culturally focused, maybe as a complementary supplementary, but it should be faith based. But I do agree with this point about the move where he talks about tradition is the best opener, as you put it, which I'm inclined to agree with now, as Majum is getting at. Slapshot 2119 says, I think that nixing aristocracy will have a much bigger effect on leveling the playing field than legalism will. The lack of happiness gained from cities outside the capital will force tradition followers to benefit from staying small. The intended purpose of that social policy tree being tradition is best for small empires. Furthermore, losing the wonder bonus along with the excessive happiness may be enough to make liberty or honor more equally viable choices in general circumstances. And in short, I think that moving aristocracy is a better choice, but I don't think it's strong enough to actually then say move that. I think we just need to leave tradition alone and actually look at piety, now whether that's compared to rationalism or not, but just in and of itself, help it have an identity. And if people want to make it cultural, I don't agree with that, but I think that would be better than, I said, the current identity crisis where you're essentially splitting the focus in piety between culture and religion, which we were getting at before.
Well, that's the thing. Piety has two problems. Comparison to the early social policies for where to stick your early choices, or comparison to just rationalism. It's not that piety sucks in comparison to rationalism. It's that beakers and getting more beakers is always better than anything else in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus I think maybe the other side of the problem is probably religion doesn't play as an important role as it probably should. I know they intended it, from what I heard in the interviews, they intended religion to be a choice, as in you would either let it happen or you would go for one. But yeah, maybe the problem with piety is not the policy itself, rather than religion being too underwhelming.
It's possible. I mean, there's certain combinations that are really great, but yeah, you can play the game without founding a religion or going with faith and be just fine. I mean, it definitely speeds you up, definitely gives you a leg up in different situations, but it is something that you can mostly ignore if you want to.
Plus, it's neighbor dependent. Like, say you have a very faith-based civ close to you, say Ethiopia, and yeah, you might as well skip it and wait for it to come to you.
Mm-hmm. Or go take them out.
Oh, take them out. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Dan. Leave tradition alone. It's relatively solid. Isn't breaking a lot of stuff except for the whole legalism gambits. But to do the legalism gambit, you have to give up monarchy and landed elite and the finisher for a very long time. So frankly, anybody who goes for the legalism gambit for, say, opera houses, is waiting for a very long time, blatantly ignoring all of the food bonuses and all of the growth bonuses and the happiness and the gold bonus from the back half of tradition. So it's really not overpowered in that respect, because they won't be growing a huge amount in the same time that they would if they ignored the legalism gambit. And growth equals science, so, you know.
And production.
Yeah, and everything else.
Yeah.
Now, the response to Messix from Slapshot 2119, which I read earlier, in his email, Messix had said that I thought what I had proposed was a pretty good solution to the problem, but I was surprised that not one single person responded to my post, and this person had, so he may have just missed it, because there was other conversations going on in the thread where people were responding to other parts of the conversation. But in contrast to an email where we had earlier about, oh, I wonder if the Polycast crew or some brilliant whereas this one was quite clear, he said, so I was wondering what the brilliant minds at the Polycast thought of my suggestion. Could you possibly discuss this on an upcoming show? Well,
no.
No. No more.
Where are the brilliant minds on this show? I'm not sure.
They're referring to me.
by the way, that also suggests either there aren't any brilliant minds, or that there are some minds on Polycast that are brilliant and some are not, so therefore some of us shouldn't have said anything.
Well, we do have guest co-hosts, which is...
Oh, nice. Pick on the guest, the first-time guest. That's nice, Phil. That's
He
was trying to go the opposite way with that. Right?
I mean, we cycle people through the show, so there's always a possibility that there's a brilliant mind on the show as a result of that.
See, you went the wrong way,
Dan.
You go deeper. You just go deeper.
I think it's time for Mackie.
before this gets completely out of control.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, it might be too late. Post by Shaglio. That's a funny name. But he was listening to the latest installment of Polycast, and said it got him to thinking about the RNG. I have to say, I prefer it for a variety of reasons. One, a unit in Civ is a representation of a group of soldiers, and in that group are many different people and personalities. The randomness of the RNG could represent one soldier's human error. No matter how well the general prepares for the battle, he still needs to rely on all his soldiers to perform their duties properly. Maybe a soldier sneezes and blows the unit's cover. Maybe a soldier has an itchy trigger finger and fires before he sees the whites of their eyes. Maybe in the chaos and confusion of battle, a soldier accidentally kills an ally. You need better soldiers. That's the solution right there. Two, weather and other environmental factors also play a role in combat. A general might strategize to take into account his and his enemy's moves, but a sudden thunderstorm or blizzard rolls in, or if there's an earthquake. Oh, now, come on. If there's an earthquake, how often does that randomly happen?
On the battlefield.
Yeah, on the battlefield. Seriously. Circumstances may change. RNG can account for these situations in a way, short of simulating weather events, that some people who have been asking for. And really, guys, you want weather events back? You want hurricanes wiping out your cities again?
Volcanoes. We talked about the weather events on the show before.
Third.
Yes, we might have touched on it.
He's a huge sports fan, and he's in an NFL Pick'em League with his family, where they attempt to predict who's going to win, which he, and no matter how much the evidence statistics suggest that Team A is going to beat Team B, sometimes Team B actually wins. A multitude of reasons why that occurs, and this can be likened to a universal RNG of sorts. Now, the Team A and Team B thing, the problem is with the Civ RNG, Team B winning is happening a little too often.
So, you can't really say Team B won on random factors. You know, sometimes... Yeah. The players actually make choices or just play better than people expected them to play. There's not a whole lot of random in most sports. It's all player choice. It might seem random, but you know, each outcome was a decision of something the players decided to do.
And, well, there's random number generators in games, and I don't think there's random number generator in football. The difference between that and between real life is that random things can actually randomly happen. In games, it's all pseudo-random, because you can't make a real random generator for a game to mimic life. So that's why games seem a little bit more wonked than what would normally happen in real life. But even still, random number generators can be built to at least pretend to be okay.
And before Mackie continues reading the rest of Shaglio's post, what he's responding to, when he said he was listening to the latest installment, yes, that would be episode 158, seeing as how this is 159. And specifically, it was recorded for episode 152 over whether or not Civilization IV combat should be random number generator dependent, as well as a modding effort by the Mian team, as well as MLS, a frequent Polycast guest co-host, to actually change this structure. So no doubt Phil will have, and probably the rest of us too, will have more to say on that in a moment. But Shaglio's post continues.
Life is chaotic and unpredictable, and the RNG exemplifies this perfectly. I don't know about that, but knowing that in the same terrain with the same promotions, Unit A will always do 34 points of damage to Unit B makes the game too predictable and formulaic. With that knowledge, you can surmise that we need exactly 3 of Unit A to kill Unit B. There's a certain degree of fun in not knowing whether these 3 Unit A's will take out Unit B or if you need to bring in another unit to finish things off. Part of the excitement of Civ games is adapting your strategies when things don't go exactly according to plan. You can argue that the ability to improvise your plan and overcome unanticipated obstacles is what makes the difference between a so-so player and a good player, and a good player and a great player. He, for one, looks forward to the challenge. It's not that formulaic to know you're going to do a certain amount of damage. I mean, when we play Civ 4, we see that we don't know exactly how many units we're going to need. We look at there's 3 archers defending that city. I better bring at least 6, preferably 8, of whatever I'm using for attacking, because sometimes they get a lot of lucky shots.
Yeah. You know, in practice, a lot of these things that people brought up as concerns, and we have not played as much Civ 4 after only a couple test runs of this mod, so we don't have the same body of evidence I would like to have for making arguments for it. But in practice, you can't really plan out, oh, I'm going to need these 6 axes to beat those 2 or 3 archers, because you don't know what the opponent can bring in addition to that city and the time it takes you to move there. And then, okay, you might want to run away, but that has its own things as well. There's a lot of unknowns, even if the outcome of an individual battle is unknown. And a lot of that does come down to what your opponent decides to do. It's still decidedly more dynamic than he's making it seem in the post. And part of that's because he's never played the mod, but yeah, that's to be expected. I don't think we ever did release that to public. It was still a work in progress when we kind of got away from playing Civ 4 a whole lot on the weekend multiplayer games. But even so, it played pretty well, honestly. And it was refreshing to not get game-breaking-wise on random outcomes. And that is something that you do have to balance between reality and gameplay considerations. On the one hand, yes, having some random outcomes or having some unexpected outcomes is realistic. But on the other, it can completely destroy the strategy aspect of the game, because no matter how good a choices you make, you lose. So, like, there's good to have some random elements that cause extra thinking to be involved. Okay, do I want to take this risk now or later? Or do I want to minimize the risk before I go in, whatever? And it's so common that, you know, a couple outcomes are changing the game. That's a pretty big problem in a strategy game. You can't have that either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in Civ 5, if you take it as a basis, Unit 8 will always do 34 points of damage. Well, yeah, it's kind of like that in Civ 5, except that even there, since most of the calculation is not random, there's still at least a small amount in the damage formula that is randomized to cover these sorts of unpredictable type stuff, where a unit might survive a little longer, or the unit might do more, a little extra damage.
This is one of the more brilliant design implementations that Civ 5 had, though, in my opinion, because not only are you still getting some RNG elements, but you're still not having game-breaking instant deaths happen virtually ever. It's pretty rare that you get completely hosed like that in Civ 5.
I think I had it recorded. I had a tank go attack an infantry and insta-died in one shot.
Yeah.
That was an RNG mess, but...
How often does that happen, though? I mean, like, on a factor of occurrence, it's probably less common than the Vita Garion's event in Civ 4 killing you instantly at the start of the game if you had events on. Usually you do some damage, and then you have some choices on how you want to handle it, how in terms of damage you did and take. That's the vast majority of cases.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare, but that's the point. It can happen, and that's fine. It's fine that it can happen. It just shouldn't be so random that it's just not worth showing up.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, Spearman versus Tank is funny the first a few times, but when it keeps repeatedly happening in the same game, that's when you rage quit. That's all we're not asking for the RNG to be completely predictable, but we're asking for a little less of the extreme outcomes, just a, you know, tiny bit.
But that's fine. You had the game, the one game, where you had multiple spear versus tank losses, and, well, the spear won, but you know what? The other million people who played didn't have a game like that, so you took it for the team.
Why am I taking things for the team, man?
Mackie had mentioned, even kind of going back to the start, about you don't know how many units you're going to need, what types of units you're going to need, but even if you could come up with that, then it's, okay, where should that unit be situated? What turn should that unit be situated? Which unit should attack first? What unit should it attack first? And then also combined with, you don't know, okay, on this turn, it looks like that there are these 10 units, so I'm going to situate myself right where they are. Well, in those 10 turns, those units could move away. Those units could be replaced. Those units could find themselves fortified. So there still is this, you know, like he says, part of the excitement of Civ games is adapting your strategies when things don't go exactly according to plan. You know, we don't often think about the extreme, by the way, of, you know what, I just won 5 30% battles in a row. You're probably thinking, sweet, but should that really have happened? No, especially if it's happening again and again and again and again. So it's one of those situations where you want the random element, but it's when it's happening again and again and again, you could argue that's being too much like a real life unknown. And this is supposed to be fun. And I think most people's element of fun would include some measure of, if not predictability, then reasonability, that the potential risk is balanced to the potential gain. And when you have those extremes, yeah, once in a while is one thing, but when it happens again and again and again, you start questioning, well, does this mean I have to start playing illogically? Or do I have to start second-guessing myself? Or am I just not going to play at all? And you, at least in that moment, you're probably not going to play at all for a while, and you're going to rage quit. recorded for episode 116 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, and Q&L.
Pierre Couture started his thread over at COC about their favorite map type and size. It's in the Civ 5 forums, but, you know, I suppose if he had a favorite Civ 4 type, that would also apply as well. He himself liked Terra and Huge. I like Civ 4 Terra. You get sort of a smaller Pangaea, and then you get raised to astronomy so you can go get all the new land all to yourself first.
I like it in concept, but it has a tendency to mess up spawns and give, like, one or two civs way more land in Civ 4. I've not played enough Terra in Civ 5 to know if that's the case or not.
For me, in Civ 5, I actually make a distinguishment between single-player and multiplayer when it comes to map size. Standard in single-player, small and multiplayer. In terms of map type, I'm going to say Fractal is my favorite in Civilization 5. Unless I'm looking for a shorter game, in which case I prefer something like Lakes, for example, as opposed to, say, Pangaea. Although you do end up with more water in Pangaea, which could potentially shrink the game time as well. If I was to choose a map type right after Fractal, though, I would say Continents, actually.
You know, the thing is, I tend to like maps that are more water than land. I don't know, I guess it's just a personal preference. Also, it just doesn't look right to me if the Earth is more land than water. I used to play Continents a lot, but I kind of switched that around just because I like to play with, like, you know, three continents, four continents. And when you have that, that means that you have, you know, two or three civs per continent. And if it hasn't turned out the right way, you can get, you know, a monster, you know, Ethiopian civilization, for example, that you have to deal with in, like, 1900. And that's just not that awesome to deal with. So what I end up usually doing is sometimes I'll do Terra, but most of the time I'll do Fractal. Yeah. And Pangaea sometimes if I'm up for like a short game. And usually I'll choose like a large size just because I kind of like my games a little bit longer, and I also like to have, you know, just a little bit more room to have my civ. I guess a little more room to expand in the beginning. That's what I mean.
It's hard on a performance standpoint, even in Civilization 4 still, to run it. So it tries my patience a little bit. But, Huge is probably my favorite. And as for map types, I would go with Fractal, just because you do get the most varied experience that way when you pick a given map script.
Same reason here, why I prefer Fractal.
Yeah, Standard's a good size, because it's big enough that you can have an interesting game, but it's not so big that it's going to go on for a week, you know? And I wish I wish the Earth maps were a little smaller, because it's always fun to play. What if this civilization was... Yeah, what if Babylon took over the world?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Just the faster. I could play those games in, like, a couple hours so easily. But no, I have to wait, like, a minute plus in the end game of Civ 4 on a huge map like that. And it's just annoying.
Recorded for episode 124 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Cartamandua, and Mad Jin.
Thread started by Happy Turtle. Thread title is On Having an Eating of Cake, which is not a lie. And it reads, crazy idea I just had. Wouldn't it be awesome to play a super game where every unique building and unit was available? And while we're making it a super game, how about being able to give your traits instead of just two? Imagine the havoc an aggressive, charismatic, imperialistic, protective leader could raise with their army of unique units. Although I think some of the economic traits would be more broken, personally. But that would be pretty strong as well. And I believe someone a little bit later in the thread comments that there's a mod that does this. Ah, yes, by Late Game Warmong. I love the name. Anyway, they have every unique unit and building and all the traits in that. It's interesting. I don't know. It certainly makes it different. Certainly different. I can't say I've tried it, but I like playing a Civ where you where you get no traits at all.
Playing
so
Cid.
This is kind of the opposite. Yeah, Cid is in Civ 4, and his tag in the XML is leader_miner or leader of barbarians, something like that. So without a game game, if you just bring up a world builder save and swap out one of the AIs with his XML tag code, you can get him to lead any civ you want. Or you can also add the minor civ into the game. It's the same thing in the XML. And the minor civ starts with all the original text, like all the first line text, but you can also remove any starting technologies for that as well. So you can have a leader that has no traits and no text in the default game. Kind of the opposite of this idea, though, where you're really going to be milking the overpowered of having everything at once. It'd certainly be amusing. Terrorists, and I don't know what you would do with like a terrorist and a obelisk or whatever, but certainly you could make more use of things. You'd have a lot of specialist slots early in the game.
All I have to say about it is it sounds obnoxious, and I like it.
Recorded for episode 150 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, QNL, and Ariok the Fourth.
Addition of stone to the game, and then with the city with that, then you can build the stoneworks that gives you the production and the pappy as well. A minor point, but maybe it's just my experience, but stone seems to be every freaking where.
Yeah.
Seems like it's every single time I turn around. Do I have stone? Well, that's a stupid question. Are you playing the game?
Well, it's different from what it used to be. It's like another luxury resource, in a sense.
It's kind of like, do you have a city without stone?
Like, ooh, you bad spot, bad.
Bad spot. I like my stoneworks.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting the production, and then it's a mini happiness resource, because you get the plus one happiness from the stoneworks in addition to the production as well. So yeah, it's just, wow. I mean, I think they also reduced the frequency of marble.
I haven't seen it as much as I used to. That's because I see all stone everywhere, though.
You do need the production, though. Anything that helps with some production in this game is welcome.
Yeah, well, I think the way they were explaining it, they switched stone in for where cows used to be. And, you know, pre-patch.
Okay.
It all suddenly makes sense.
That was an awesome replace all.
Well, yeah. Stone doesn't make noise, so that is a plus.
Yeah, I mean, there's still cows on the map, but they used to have cows in Grasslander.
It used to be, do you have a city without cows?
Yeah, and that was really hard. And not to mention the sheep. The sheep are everywhere. It was a balance point. You know, you get grassland starts where it's like, woohoo, I can hit huge population. Not going to build a warrior for another 40 turns, but yay, I got population. So it kind of helps balance that, which is good because, you know, a plain start versus a grassland start, two totally different things, can be potentially painful.
Man, I remember when plains used to be a stucky tile.
It still can be. You don't grow unless you get workers out to farm them, and even then you're not going to grow very fast.
Yeah. They're not as horrifying as they used to be, though.
Yeah, not really. I mean, Civ 4 type.
I was going to say, yes. They're not Civ 4 planes that are useful for workshops, and yeah.
And not only then, not until, like, Cast Guild Chemistry or later. Just about every early tech I've skipped, depending on the situation. I played a lot of Civ 4. I don't want to count. But literally every starting tech, I've gone good 50-100 turns without having it in some cases. They were extreme cases. You know, I can count on one hand the number of times where I've avoided, say, the wheel or agriculture in the early goings. But I've seen it before. Like, my entire continent was fish or livestock. And so, you know, what am I going to farm? I don't have a lot of fresh water. Why would I bother researching agriculture? You know, if I wanted cottages, I can go through fishing for pottery. But, you know, even then, since it was mostly the coastal, that wasn't there. When you're creative, you really don't need mysticism early unless you are going for a religion of some kind, or you want monarchy super early, something like that. Archery, well, hunting, if you don't have any hunting resources and you don't need archers, again, that's trash. Seafood, if you don't have any of that and you don't have any water, fishing is questionable. Mining is probably the one that I would not use the least. You usually do have hills, so it takes some wonky settings that have caused me to put off mining. But even so, I've gotten a good 30, 40, 50 turns without mining in some cases. This is titled Delayed Bronze Working Start / The Benefits of Avoiding Bronze Working. So those are the two threads. And they're both pretty long threads, especially the benefits of avoiding bronze working. We'll start with that one, because the other one is a game start that suggests that maybe you would avoid bronze working in the start. And I'll go over the major points, because each one has like a 200 and so or so word, or maybe it's just 100 word, or whatever, summary under each point. But number one, bronze working advantages are not always that attractive. Number two, alternative tech paths can be more efficiently attained by avoiding bronze working. Great engineer bulbs that become available are mining, feudalism, the wheel, masonry, and construction. Feudalism's interesting, as is construction. There's a couple great scientist ones as well, one of them being liberalism, but I wouldn't recommend avoiding bronze working that long. Your merchant bulbs, okay, so that's each of the bulb categories. If you guys are interested, I would suggest looking at the thread, because reading through that would take a long time. Okay, some comments on tech trading. Some experienced players reading the first version of this article have noted that not self-teching bronze working and actively avoiding bronze working are two different things. That's true. This is a lot of information to test into a segment on this show. But basically, there are times where slavery and bronze working isn't everything. I'm not sure if you would want to avoid it in the start in the other thread that I referenced, though. The capital itself doesn't look that... It looks like a capital where you can get away with delaying bronze working. I mean, you have the cow for production. You can mine up to 3 hills, which you already have mining for. And then you don't have a lot of food, so there's not a lot of whipping that you would want to go. So yeah, you might actually go for other techs before bronze working. And you know, maybe if you wanted to go for like Great Wall or something, maybe you would even take that stone as a priority. I'm not... No, it's Frederick. So okay, maybe not. Depends. It's hard to get things on D80, and that's what the start is. But yeah, I've seen further down the thread, Mylene, who's a very good D80 player, commenting that this is not a start where you would want to delay bronze working. And looking at the kettle, I don't see why that is, but you know, she said that she looked through the world builder, so there's probably something like a couple fishing villages or like a double corn site or something where you would want to whip. But yeah, the whip's not that great. You're not going to get that much more efficiency from whipping than you would from just working mines. In fact, grassland hill mines are equally efficient, even with a granary, for the most part. So it isn't an easy choice in the early game. It really isn't. It does depend very much on terrain.
Yeah. Oh, it's just like anything else. If you have one of these, you know, starts that some basic tech doesn't look like it's necessary, then yes, you can ignore it.
Or at least delay it until it becomes necessary. Oh, here, right here in her first post. I missed this earlier. But yeah, there's two of them with fish. Yeah, there is a fishing village nearby with two fish. So I'm not sure you'd want to put off slavery when your only production in one or two of your cities early in the game is whips. But yeah, it's like Magin is saying. If you don't need it right away and other things are going to give you more benefits sooner, then you go for the other things.
And different little beelines help, especially for with you. What you can bulb will adjust based on what you have researched or not. So
yes,
it's a start. If you don't need axemen early in the game, then you're okay.
Yeah, or whipping or whips.
Yeah, basically, I mean, there's lots of situations like this. And it could be that just somebody's just figured something out really late that others either knew or just didn't really think about.
It just depends. Absolutely. It's not just bronze working. Any of the early texts can be like
this. Part of this was also to follow up in a way from episode 144, where we included a discussion that was recorded for episode 134, which was the connection between great scientists bulbing for research and avoiding the fishing technology.
Yes.
Extreme connection. And I just not seen specifically delaying bronze working for A, the extended period of time potentially that this person was talking about, but the advantages that could be brought about and the bulbing implications as well, which I never really looked beyond the, oh, No, I don't have anyone near me. I'll be able to defend myself with archers, for example. Or, oh, I've got horse, so I can use that for combat as well. Oh, I don't have a lot of forests near me, so chopping isn't that attractive. I don't think I want to use slavery right away. I want to build up my city's population first, etc., etc. So, yes, it is a rather involved two threads. First being when he made his initial argument, Brennus Quigley then started essentially, looks like an extended let's play of sorts, using text and images to actually show what this could look like in practice, which is a bit more recent than his discussion thread that he started back in August.
I have to say I'm not impressed with these bold lists, now that you brought them up again. Because a lot of like the scientist stuff, I don't see anything you couldn't get if you just picked up Bronze Working, honestly. He has bolded liberalism, but if you just avoid machinery, you can bold liberalism pretty easily, so that's not a big deal. And it's the same thing, well, engineers, you know, it's hard to get engineers early, so that's not very reliable. Whereas great merchants, currency, code of laws, I mean, well, currency is first bold priority anyway. Civil service is late there after monarchy. You know, none of that's all that difficult to get anyway. The same thing with nationalism. It's just people usually either live that or self-tech it, but or trade for it. Jeez. Any of those is a viable possibility. These just aren't attractive bulb options.
So we change game, and we go to a post on Civ Fanatics from Cro-Magnus, or Cro-Magnus, I don't know. Missionary or Second Great Prophet. And it reads, "So, I love religious texts, itinerant preachers, and I can't imagine risking losing it. However, it occurs to me that being the first to get out a missionary and having him hightail it out of the frontier could be a critical advantage in spreading your religion, maybe enough to make up for losing the best extenders for spreading religion. Thoughts? Second Great Prophet at 300 faith or missionary first? How many faith per turn before it's worth it? 20? Only delaying the extended 10 turns might make it worthwhile." So, first off, for those who might not know, itinerant preachers increases religion spread to cities 30% further away. I think it's 13 tiles. And religious texts increases the religion pressure by 34%, maybe, up to 68% when printing press is researched.
Correct.
Yay. Well, when I go for a religion, which basically in the first place is neighbor dependent, as we covered a bit earlier, obviously get the first profit naturally, i.e. by accumulating faith. But I try and shoot for Hagia Sophia for the second. I usually don't shoot for the 300 faith and hope to get a great profit as ASAP. Now, whether I get the Hagia Sophia by the Liberty Finisher or with the Great Engineer, that is, or by building the Wonder straight away, I try to time it that so that I get the Hagia Sophia, then build missionaries. When you shoot for those two enhances, well, I mean, the three cities that follow your religion that you will have by using the first missionary is usually enough to ensure that your religion will spread, or at least not get knocked back by a neighbor. I mean, if you shoot for Liberty Finisher and get the Hagia Sophia that way, means delaying that wonder a bit compared to how early you could get it if you went straight for it. That's personal experience, but I mean, on higher difficulty levels, I found that the AI doesn't always prioritize the Hagia Sophia. Therefore, by chance, they don't build it. Then I get it. If they do, then I have to wait until I reach 300 faith again. But I already saved up. Not everything goes to hell. Plus, if you miss on Hagia Sophia, there's always a nice bunch of wonders you could get roughly the same time. Like Chichen Itza, if you're going full Gacha, that's not a bad plan. And if you're still locked on getting religion, the Great Mosque is the same text, so you might get one. Or Notre Dame a bit later. I mean, I usually try to get Hagia Sophia for my second Great Prophet and save the faith for a missionary, not accumulate faith and get it naturally, that is.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to use Hagia Sophia or Liberty to get the second prophet, then yes, it's definitely worth grabbing the missionary. And there is some thought line behind it, unlike some of the other posts I've seen. There is some thought behind using that missionary, because the earlier you get your religion into a city, the more likely it is that one use of a missionary will actually convert it. So especially city-states and stuff like that, when they're low pop, it's really easy to get them to be the majority. And then with the mechanic, they'll basically just stay at majority with you as long as no other religion's pushing into it. The one problem I find with this is that to get a chain started is one thing, but to get a chain to start pushing stuff is another, and you need to enhance your religion before pressure really exists for your religion. So you might spam out a couple of missionaries and trip over a number of cities, but that doesn't mean you're going to be keeping that if somebody else has a lot of pressure because they enhanced their religion. So there is a drawback to doing it. But given the random number generator for getting the prophets, if you've gone more than a couple turns waiting for your second great prophet and you've built up a ton of extra faith, then it's definitely worth buying a missionary and waiting to hit that 300 again so that you don't waste all that extra faith.
Read from Monthar in the chat, which was, I typically go for the second prophet first. However, after reading that thread and thinking about it, I agree it might just be better to get a single missionary out before the second prophet. And I would say that I am with Monthar, that that's what I typically do. But this thread is now making me also reevaluate that that is not always the best choice for reasons that have already been discussed.
I still think it's a really good choice, though. Using your second prophet as soon as possible for a religion means that you're going to get the second follower belief, not just the enhancer. So depending on how many AIs or other players are trying to found religions, some follower beliefs are better than others. Some enhancer beliefs are better than others. It can be worth trying to do that without initially spreading your religion.
Yeah, plus, as you said, you have to monitor what beliefs are already on the map. Say you have Ethiopia right on your corner and he already has a bunch of cities. Now what you can do is use the enhancer that gives you beakers every time you convert a city. That might be more profitable rather than trying and actually be the dominant religion. Because, well, in some cases you might just fail. So might as well get some beakers out of it.
Yeah, founder belief for using missionaries or great prophets to get beakers for every follower in the city that use it. Those are great for when there's a holy city like Ethiopia capital that's huge and you just don't bother converting it. You'll constantly get tons of extra beakers out of them. There's good things one way or another, but yeah, I can see points where you would want to use the missionary, especially if you're going to use Liberty or Hagia Sophia. If you are going to use Hagia Sophia or Liberty to finish, if you can get a natural great prophet at the 300 level before using those, then it is definitely worth it to get the prophet first, just because prophet's costs go up and everything makes them go up, so that happens.
More Pantheon beliefs. We started the thread, Omnipotent 42. Says, I find the current selection of Pantheon beliefs too limiting and almost as much of a gamble as Spain's unique ability. I really don't like the ones that are specific to resources, like the one that grants +1 faith and +1 culture for every gold and silver. I've probably used that belief once. I think Pantheon should be more about tile improvements than the actual resource provided. There aren't any beliefs that enhance bronze or salt luxury resources. I would work out a Pantheon belief to be like this, +1 culture and +1 faith per mine on a luxury resource. And I guess my response to that is, aren't you just asking for more of the same?
Or what the fuck?
Because the thing is, where you get the +1 faith and the +1 culture for every gold and silver.
Religious idols.
So if you then have +1 culture and +1 per mine on a luxury resource, then that is about the tile improvement.
That'd start including salt, which is already overpowered.
So when he says this is more about fixing the situational Pantheon beliefs to be more inclusive, the fact that you've only used that religious idols once is either a combination of some things. Either one, you haven't played that much Civ 5, or more likely perhaps number two, you just haven't found yourself at a starting location where you have gold and or silver that would not only benefit you for that, but you also take into account, well, I may have gold and silver, but maybe I want a little more culture. I want a little more faith, and I'm willing to trade off having plus one faith and plus one culture, which I could get twice, or perhaps say you, oh, I don't know, start with lots of desert nearby, and you decide that you would rather have plus faith from every desert tile. So the point is that they are intended to be situational, especially those that are attached to specific resources, because again, it's also about when we're talking about pantheon beliefs, you're not necessarily going to get a religion just because you get a pantheon, but you are almost certainly going to get a pantheon at some point. So there will be some benefit for you. Obviously, sooner is better than later in the case of, you know, plus one of anything. But I don't really think that there's anything to fix in terms of his approach. I actually like that variety, that sometimes that this is kind of a quote-unquote be-all, but you may find that, oh, that pantheon has already been taken, similar to our last topic where you're trying to decide between a missionary and a second great prophet. So you may, in that situation, decide, no, I'd rather just have a missionary that I can get more quickly and spread my religion rather than being able to add a belief, because the one that I wanted, one that I think that's going to benefit me, has already been taken. So this just gives more variety.
Yeah, he wants to genericize it so that you get not just gold and silver, but then that would add gems, which is a mineable thing, and bronze, and salt, although don't really want to see either of those included. But that's the problem. It's like, ooh, it's a nice generic one that you can use constantly, but the pantheons were built, at least for the game, to have some situational ones which are more powerful than the other generic ones. The generic ones are just useful, and you can always take them. But when you have a specific situation, sometimes those are very good, like the wine and incense pantheon belief that also merges with the monastery follower belief to produce lots of culture and gold. But you have to have incense and wine around, so you can produce a lot as long as you have a lot. Yeah, situational is good because it adds flavor, so you're not taking the same thing every single game.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
All right, that takes us to the end of the show.
Yes, it does.
Continue.
Yes, it does. This has been episode 159 of Polycast. We've been joined by our guest, Kaya.
Bye-bye.
And regular co-host, Makalua.
Nap time.
Dan Q.
May the faith be with you.
The me and team.
The RNG says that I must say goodbye.
And myself, Madjin, with your mom.
That was... I didn't stop it yet, just so you know.
You're a few seconds too early on that joke.
All right, so we're now waiting for the ad. This musical interlude brought to you by Stop That.
Yeah. Actually, no, it wasn't a Stop That moment. It was a, no, I have to replace what you're saying with something else. So she didn't even want to stop it.
No, I didn't stop it. It was easier just to hum over you.
at least the capital itself, itself looking at it.
Hold on. Wait.
What?
We have people in the chat saying that the show cut off.
That's lovely.
Dan? Oh. Are we still streaming, Dan?
All right. I guess that takes us to our next topic again. It takes us to our next topic again. Wow, there's a brilliant surprise turn of events.
Hey, yo.
Kaya?
Yeah. All right, let's see.
I'll censor myself. Actually, no, that will result in a massive penalty and denouncement from your ally for you being a deadbeat, D-bag, loser, warmongering menace to the world.
That's, wow.
And relatively on topic. Okay. Mackie?
Mm-hmm. Where is the topic? Sorry,
I don't know.
Too many
is it your talking, Nick? I just haven't heard
I don't know.
In a while.
I don't think it's mine.
No. It's mine. I think Madgen just wanted to hear your voice. And plus one. Record date October 20th, 2012. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.